Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
McDaniel will end it in style. Arkansas is in hog heaven. They've won the first ever national championship.
Still missing your free throws, Wes? Who cares? They don't show free throws in SportsCenter.
Here's Washington. On the drive.
I don't know if he'll make any change, but I figure it's time for me to start playing ball.
And they do it in stunning fashion over the number two team in the country.
Fact is, I missed a shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Ty Richardson, that was a successful trip to the fort without having to work at all, without doing any radio, without really parsing any thoughts together whatsoever. Without having to do any prep, I felt like it was a successful trip because we had a lot of fun at the ESPN Arkansas Christmas luncheon. And that's probably the best way to put it because it was a luncheon. It had a party atmosphere to it, but at 11:45, it's tough to use the term party, especially when you got a buffet lunch set out. That just sounds more like a luncheon. So I think that's what we had yesterday. I got to say though, And it was great talking with all of the other members of ESPN Arkansas, who are of course spread out throughout our three station networks. So you never really don't get a chance to see their faces very much. But we all came away with something, and I feel like everybody got away with something they were pretty happy with, which is rare at for a Dirty Santa gift exchange. But then again, if I get away with a couple of bottles. I feel safe saying that. We've been doing this show for a little over 3 months.
Now we can talk about alcohol.
And we've been talking. That's why we've already been talking about alcohol for the last, 2-3 months. But Tommy Kraft knows how to give away some Christmas gifts. I'll tell you that. And he also knows how to package the big bottles of booze in a way so you know exactly what you're opening when you are opening it. I knew which bag to go for. It turned out to be right. I was at the right spot in the order where I felt confident that there were other gifts that might be have more bells and whistles. So those would be the ones that got stolen. I turned out to be right. Got away with the bottle of Crown Apple, giant bottle of Grey Goose. That was a good gift. And what'd you get away with? You got away with free food, which is basically all your life comes down to, is as free of the food as you can get.
Yeah, Tommy was joking with me this morning. So, Phil, I've told you this, that before I moved here, when I was in Nashville, I was working part-time in sports radio on another job. I was waiting tables at Outback. And so Tommy got some Outback gift cards for the gift drawing. It's like, I was hoping you wouldn't get those. I like Outback still. And the gifts that Tommy selected were awesome. Like, John mentioned that this morning on the Morning Rush, how he's never been to a Christmas party with such elaborate, such awesome gifts. And I have to kind of echo what he said because, I mean, there wasn't one gift in that exchange, in the white elephant, in the Secret Santa that I didn't at least want a little bit. Now, there were some gifts like what you got, a fat thing of Crown Apple that some wanted more than others, at the Casey's gift card, which I'd use for gas.
First time I've tasted that stuff, by the way. That is really good.
Wow,
frighteningly good.
Yeah, it's very good. I wouldn't drink that Grey Goose. You can make your martinis with it though. So there you go. But yeah, no, the gifts were awesome. Tommy did a great job. Betty did a great job with Family Feud. That was fun. Just the whole entourage, the whole day. I thought it was pretty fab. Now it's about like Chad Morris coming in and instilling what he wants to at Arkansas. I was joking with Tommy this morning. It's us about changing the culture now. We're kind of shifting towards it a little bit, Phil. It's not a 1 year change. It's slowly but surely. Then eventually, maybe next year, it might be a 5 o'clock thing. Then it's an 8 o'clock thing, and then pretty soon it's a midnight thing. It's just about changing the culture here at ESPN.
So when you're talking about changing the culture, you specifically mean the culture of parties, or if this is the only party that the company has throughout the 12 month calendar year.
Yeah.
That's right. So have you started? What did they used to have? Have they already been pushing it back? Did it used to be a company wide breakfast?
Well, they used to.
And now move it out to a luncheon. Pretty soon it'll be a happy hour. Then the next thing you know, it'll start at 9 at night. They'll save it till New Year's. We'll have
We'll have a second dinner at 1 o'clock in the morning, and then we'll all go to Waffle House. Oh, pardon me. We'll have to go to Insomnia Cookies at 2 o'clock in the morning. No, you're never going to get over that.
So Dan was telling me this morning, our sales manager, that they used to do it here at the station. So Tommy's already elevated a little bit to a country club.
That's a step ahead. Yeah,
step ahead.
I love the studios in Barling, but it ain't a party atmosphere.
It's not Vienna Hill. So it's about trusting the process, and slowly but surely, because I'm the youngest person in this company.
And they reminded you of this quite a few times at the party yesterday.
Making fun of my lack of fandom
experience,
for Mac and Cheating Experience,
wisdom,
whatever it was.
Yeah, take a pick.
It didn't really matter, but it's about injecting some life, because you're young at heart. You're not young at age, but you're young at heart. So it's about injecting some millennialism in this company, the good type, which is the fun type. There's not a lot of good type, but there's occasionally... You can pick out like a good thing or two that millennials bring, and having fun is one of them.
There was a point in time where I used to be fun. I don't know where it stopped. I really don't. I can't point to a moment or something I said or something I did. But I think I used to be fun. Now I'm just pretty much a stick in the mud. I could not stick around in the fort yesterday. They offered up a place to stay. You and John did. You said, "Hey, we got an extra spot on the floor for you to sleep."
That's what we said.
It's exactly what they said. And I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to head home. Got a couple of kids, and I think I'll let them hang out instead of hang out with the other two kids. Let's move on to the big topic of the day. This D. Walker thing. Now, you hate any time that a player on your team gets arrested, and you almost feel worse when it's somebody that nobody's ever heard of before. I had not heard of D. Walker.
You feel worse? No, you feel worse if it's a star player that has a great impact on the team, and it cripples what could be the transition moving forward. This is not.
Well, it makes you wonder. And there's no evidence behind it at all. But you know, a guy that's a third stringer, he's kind of under the radar. Nobody knows who he is, and you know, this is. I don't know. It kind of makes you wonder about what else is going on amongst the third stringers or the walk-ons. He says tongue in cheek. But D. Walker, and you know, when I first looked at the headline and it said intent to deliver, that usually has more to do with the amount that you're carrying than anything else. But then you look at what he also had with him: the baggies, the scale, the gun, the ammo. Yeah, there was probably pretty heavy intent to deliver there, and it's good. Well, he's gone from the program, so he's now he was Arkansas linebacker D. Walker when he woke up yesterday morning. He ain't that anymore, and he won't be ever again.
It is free shipping day, Phil.
Well, I don't think he is sending anything to you for free, or to anybody for free, for that matter. And it sounds like his intent to deliver might have come with a nasty intent as well.
95.8 grams of weed, 40 Xanax pills, and then the individual sandwich bags. That kind of is the tell sign for he was intending to deliver. And you mentioned the AR-15, and also he had a digital scale on him as well. And what we heard this morning is that he was caught by an undercover cop. For whatever reason, I initially thought it was he was caught like driving or something, got pulled over, but it was an undercover policeman.
So the intent to deliver is the idea that he probably thought this was a customer.
That's my understanding.
It's pretty obvious then if the cop is the one that you thought you were selling to.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll lead to a guilty plea.
Yep.
And that name will probably be forgotten in the grand scheme of things. What are you doing with an AR-15, though, D?
In Fayetteville. And I know there's, I mean, when you deal with drugs, there's typically bad people that you run into on a daily basis. But Fayetteville's like one of the nicest slash non-aggressive slash non-crime. I could be completely wrong per capita, but I feel like there's not a lot of crime in Fayetteville, right? Unless it's like really small petty crime.
Well, it's the violent edge to this crime that leads to it. And I know there wasn't violence involved, but when you're carrying around a fully loaded AR-15, you've got some. I think you have bad intentions. You can't carry around that weapon without the intentions that sort of go along with it. So, I know it probably in his mind was a matter of self-defense, but that's also that's a pretty heavy weapon to be carrying around. So you do have a feeling that this that D. Walker is going to be going away for a good long time.
And it should be mentioned that this is not a Chad Morris recruited player. This is recruited under Brett Bielema. So, I think Nikki put this out on their Twitter feed. This is the third arrest in the Chad Morris era. And we were talking about this morning how you think about great coaches, and especially in college football. Who would you say, and I know he just retired, but you got to say Urban Meyer is along with Nick Saban are the two best coaches in college football, Nick being at number one. And we had Melanie from Harrison call in this morning and was acting like Nick Saban never has anything. And we kind of just did a stop. And I was like, Reuben Foster, Cam Robinson. I mean, there are so many names, Alabama, not as many as Urban Meyer had at Florida with the likes of Aaron Hernandez, Chris Rainey, Percy Harvin, Riley Cooper. But, Phil, I always joke about this, that on-the-field talent leads to off-the-field issues. But it's true. Like, that you can look almost at a case-by-case basis on great college football teams, Florida State, James Winston. I mean, I could go down the list of national champions, and you could look at the players on their roster, and you could find arrest. You can find bad behavior. Oh, I mean, it's just across the board.
Some of the great programs, even in the last 30 years. I mean, I think to some of Oklahoma's issues with Barry Switzer as the head coach in the 80s. They had a lot of guys that got arrested. I think Miami under Jimmy Johnson and Dennis Erickson had some. Bob Stoops at Oklahoma. I mean, I was looking some of this stuff up earlier today, and before the first 3 months of the offseason after the 2016 season, there were five OU players arrested. That also included Baker Mayfield in Fayetteville, but a few others. And, of course, there's the Joe Mixon situation that he, you know, as violent as he was.
Pickleman's. Norman. Sorry.
So, I mean, it is. Look, Arkansas is not on this. This is not a problem.
They don't have Chad the on the field success.
They don't have the they don't quite live up to the success of some of those other programs I just mentioned. And it's been that case for decades over a century.
Yeah, exactly.
Now. I mean, if you're an athlete on campus, you tend to believe that you can get away with more than you know, so-called regular student. And I'm not saying that all the student athletes feel that way, but there's been that feeling, and certainly the power of the coaches might have something to do with it. This is a different situation, though, with a guy like D. Walker. I just don't know how much playing time he got. He was a third stringer. I don't know where he would fit into the rest of the pro. You kind of wonder what's going on in somebody's life when they feel they've got to resort to dealing specifically. I mean, if you're gonna smoke a joint, you know, I mean, just you got to do what you can so that you're not. You know, if you get tested, then you figure it out, or you just don't do that. And then, but it's a whole different thing when you're talking about, you know, baggies, Xanax pills, almost 100 grams, which is a lot. And this is not this. It's not for personal usage. This is something that he was trying to make a buck on. So, and this also doesn't lead to, for me, a conversation about, you know, you need to be paying players because anything like this happens. No, this is a matter of potentially somebody just having bad intentions. I'm sorry, when you carry around a loaded AR-15, and I don't really care what reason you do, there's going to be bad intentions behind that. So, for me, this has so much more to do with the individual than the program right now. I guess you do wonder about the oversight, but it's not like the coaches can be 150% in the weeds of these kids' lives. And I don't say that pun was not intended there, by the way. but I guess you do wonder, but it's not like they can have an eye inside these kids' rooms. Sometimes the roommates don't know what's going on. So it's obviously a situation that you would you don't want to be worried about when you're so close to a national signing day, which is supposed to have such a big impact on this program. And that leads me to the next topic. And I think this Ben Hicks situation with the transfer quarterback from SMU. He played for Chad Morris for a couple of years.
Pick six is his nickname. That's some SMU.
Oh, great!
SMU kids have reached out.
So this is a record setter on campus at Southern Methodist who's got the single most negative nickname in the history of quarterback.
Pick six six.
I can't believe that would be his name. So I thought that and I'm not saying that he is the answer, but it just seems to make way too much sense for Ben Hicks to not end up transferring to the University of Arkansas. And I say that without knowing some of the other quarterbacks that are making themselves available as grad transfers, and I don't know the situation for JUCO quarterbacks or any level of talent that they have coming out and where they would fit in, but you got to have somebody in there, not just to replace Cole Kelly, because Ty Story cannot be the assumed starter going in to the 2019 season. And whether he does win the job again or not is another story, but he's got to compete for it. There has to be a real competition for that position in the spring. And right now, there isn't. There doesn't seem to be a real competition for that position. And I wonder if maybe adding somebody like Ben Hicks, who knows the system, who has been around for 3 years, has had some level of success, obviously not SEC success. But I also wonder who else can you look to as far as coming to the University of Arkansas to transfer and play for 1 year or potentially 2 years?
Well, the pickings are slim in terms of Arkansas doesn't have a lot to offer these kids. Yes, Chad Morris had success at Clemson, but when a kid sees a 2-10 record the previous year, that hurts more than you can know. No, they're not going to get Jalen Hurts. No, they're probably not going to get Khalil Tate. No, they're probably not going to get Mason Fine. I mean, these are kind of names that have hit the Twitter sphere as possibilities, maybe transferring out of their respective programs. But I feel like Arkansas just doesn't have a lot of options, and they don't have a lot of things to offer these kids, like, in terms of wins.
That's why I feel that Hicks is, it's almost too obvious for all of the talk of how important it was for Kelly Bryant's relationship to Chad Morris to be the main reason why he potentially would have come to Arkansas. Then you've got to look at it the same way between Ben Hicks and Chad Morris. And I know it's a major step up in competition for Hicks. It wouldn't necessarily have been that big of a step up in competition for Kelly Bryant. Would have been a step up, but not as big from the ACC to the SEC as Conference USA is. And for someone that knows the system, it makes too much sense. Not that he's the answer, not that he's the savior. He's not. I'm not saying Ben Hicks is the guy to lead you to a winning record or a bowl game.
He's just better what you have than what you have.
And he's a warm body. He's that's what it comes to. He's a warm body that knows the system, has the relationship, and for what you read from his head coach at SMU, that they felt that he's a good kid. He was looking to make a move, and they seemed to be okay with it and had good words for him. But then again, if they seem to be okay with it, maybe he lost the starting job for a game or so to a freshman. You wouldn't feel very confident about that if he does come here. I just feel like with all of the factors that are going on in the Arkansas quarterback room and the factors of Hicks and Morris knowing each other as well as they would, I would imagine that Morris knows Ben Hicks better than he did Kelly Bryant. If he coached him 2 years, I don't think there's any doubt about that. It just makes way too much sense. I don't know when he makes a decision, when he's got to make a decision, but these decisions can't take too long anymore, because these rosters are, it's not that they're going to get set, but I mean, I think Chad wants to know what other options he's got if Ben Hicks is not the guy to step into that quarterback room next.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at Phil Elson PXP and at Ty Sports Radio.
Beard ahead to Gafford. How about a windmill? Let's put a little exclamation point on it. The Hogs are moving on.
And what was your driving test like when you did that back in the day?
Growing up in Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
First of all, it was a closed course, so that it wasn't like we were really driving in the neighborhoods. I don't know, maybe they didn't expect us klutzes or idiots who didn't really know how to drive anyway to pass a test when you had real licensed drivers out there. But it was on a closed course. And the only thing I remember about it was that we had to do parallel parking.
Oh, you did? Okay.
In Pittsburgh, you better be able to parallel park. That's just a rite of passage there, and it's a way of life. Different from where I live in Little Rock. where you got to navigate the stupidest, tiniest little, most ridiculously designed parking lots that I've ever been around. I digress. Those are the only things I remember about it. And the one thing I ever got dinged for was not turning on the defogger when it started to rain. That was it. Does it sound anything like the driving test that you had to undergo in Little Rock? Or, well, I don't know what Arkansas driving tests are like.
So I failed the written portion the first time, and my dad was so mad because he had to drive me, and it was out of the way of his work, and I had studied for it. Like, I wasn't just screwing around. I'd actually studied for it.
Your dad had been counting down to that day for years.
Exactly. Second time I passed the writing portion, and so I was 15 years old at the time. And he was freaking. This is a couple days after I turned 16, if I remember correctly. He was freaking out. He's like, "You haven't gone driving with me enough. You haven't been driving enough, blah, 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 blah." I'm like, "Dad, my buddies have taken it. It's four right turns." He's like, "What if it's not? What if it's not the same cop? What if it's blah, blah, blah?" And I'm just like, "Just chill, man. Like, come on." And so we get there. And like I thought, walk in. I have to show him how I parked. And I kid you not. We go out of the parking lot, we turn right four times, and literally make a square box, and I come back in, and I park, and I get told I pass. And I'm just laughing at my dad when he walks in. I'm like, "I told you, like, you were freaking out more about this than I was." So, it was really easy. I don't know if that's the same for Arkansas kids today doing the written portion, or excuse me, the driving portion of the test, but back in my day, it was pretty easy.
Oh, I'm already counting down the days until my 9-year-old starts to drive. She is too, although I keep reading that millennials aren't driving as much as we used to, but as non-millennials, driving's down 20 or 30%.
It's probably better that way, honestly.
I don't know if that's the case in Arkansas, honestly, because this isn't a state that's got great public transportation. But hey, you know, if you're going to have a driving test, and let's just be honest here, most people do a little knee driving. Have you ever done any knee driving, Ty?
I have not. Well, I honestly haven't. Now, I'll say this. I haven't had hands on the wheel before, and I've fallen asleep behind the wheel, but I have never, like, used my knees to drive.
We're frightening people right now out there who are listening. So, well, you ought to be able to drive with both knees and two hands today because the roads do get slick, especially in Arkansas when it's raining. Be awfully, awfully safe out there. I'll say one thing because we're about to do our FOMO Friday. I do so much driving between the Rock and the Fort in Northwest Arkansas that I'm pretty thankful that today is not a day that I am on those freeways. So we always have a FOMO Friday. I have no FOMO on not being on the roads today at all. I'm excited about staying in one place for the rest of the day. But otherwise, we got some other places we'd like to be. So FOMO Friday, and I'll start off with something that I have been missing all week long. The baseball winter meetings were held in Las Vegas over the last week. And they're so much fun because you get the major leagues and the minor leagues together, and there's so much differentiation between what the major league teams are there for, which is signing players, making trades, conversations between general managers, and also getting the organizations together to get everybody in one place at one time to talk strategy for the upcoming year. It's really all about the actual baseball on the field. And sure, there's plenty of other stuff that goes on involving buying merchandise and equipment for concession stands and everything. But then the minor leagues, it's all about a job fair and meetings together with your league and trying to find out what will sell in your shops and all that kind of stuff. But then when it really comes down to it, it's all about getting together and partying and drinking and going out. And that's why they did it in Las Vegas. I saw a really interesting story how the hotel, and I don't remember the hotel that the major leagues were stationed at for the winter meetings, because of their anti-cheating technology for the casino, it interfered with just about every cell phone that the general managers brought inside the hotel with them. So it's weird because they're all in the same hotel, so you figure they could get together face-to-face and have their conversation, but they're still talking on cell phones to each other while they're in this room, and nobody can get a signal. Can you imagine trying to do trade negotiations or talk to a player agent about something as important as a multi-year, multi-million dollar contract, and every 4 minutes you've got to wonder if the dude on the other line has heard anything you just said. Are you there? Are you there? Are you there? I'm thinking a fourth year with another $15 million. What? This is no way to be conducting baseball winter meetings, but I wish I would have been there because I've been to the meetings in Boston and New Orleans and Nashville, and it's so much fun. But it's been a while since I've been attended to the winter meetings, so it's just another year with winter meeting FOMO for me, Ty Richardson, so it's just a little more of the same.
For whatever reason, I always like to go back in time with these FOMOs because, as you've mentioned several times, I was born in the wrong era. I wish I was born about 20 years earlier because I feel like a lot of the sports pioneers I never got to experience live, and one of them happens to be Howard Cosell, who retired on this day from Monday Night Football back in 1984. But that's really not the biggest call he's remembered for. It's this one back in 1973.
Is as poised as can be in a neutral corner.
The iconic fight between Joe Frazier and George Foreman back in 1973. Cosell had many interactions with Muhammad Ali. So on Monday Night Football, I mean, this guy was just all over the place and is one of the biggest pioneers of sports broadcasting, for sure.
And he wasn't even trained in sports broadcasting. Mm-hmm. His training was in the law. Howard Cosell was a lawyer by trade and moved into sports, I think, if I remember, mostly as a boxing guy in the late 50s and the early 60s. Of course, I think other than Monday Night Football, he's more known for his relationship, almost in a comedic way, not almost, but in a comedic way, with Muhammad Ali. And, of course, it does go back to that fight as well, the Rumble in the Jungle, and other fights that he had announced with Muhammad Ali in there. But then it's the Monday Night Football thing, because he was the second play-by-play voice of Monday Night Football. I think Keith Jackson was the first. I think when ABC actually started it, I think Keith Jackson was the play-by-play announcer. That's right. And Howard Cosell was actually the color commentator, not the play-by-play guy.
Transitioned to play-by-play.
And then transitioned into the play-by-play.
Interesting.
And the relationship between Cosell and Don Meredith was really one of the reasons that people wanted to go watch this game every Monday night. Yeah, they had the good matchups, but it was also the back and forth between Cosell and Meredith that was so entertaining. They would go at each other quite a bit. He's also known, remember, I meant to bring this up last week because it was the anniversary of the assassination of John Lennon. It was announced to the entire country that Lennon was assassinated on Monday Night Football by Howard Cosell.
Wow.
Yeah, and you always have to remember this when you're a sports broadcaster, and I don't know if Howard looked at it this way, if he meant to do it this way, or was just the strength of his personality and how abrasive he could be, but also how entertaining he could be. He could be very condescending, but he could also be very endearing. That at the very same time, he was both the most admired and liked and disliked and hated sports broadcaster of his era. I don't know if I'd put Stephen A. Smith in that category both ways.
that's curious. I don't want to, just real quick, who do you think that is? I don't want to get too
today,
down a rabbit trail.
Oh, man, dude, so many. Don't try
it's
to
be
this.
Skip. I think it has to be Skip.
Which Skip? You have to remind me here.
Bayless.
Oh, Skip Bayless.
Yeah, I think it has to be him.
You say Skip, and I'm thinking baseball. I'm thinking Skip Carey.
Oh.
Skip Bayless, perhaps. I don't know. I'd be interested if Cosell was around today, because
put a poll out. Who do you hate the most?
Right
in sports
right.
broadcasting,
but Cosell. There'll never be anybody like him again because he was the real thing. And there's so many more sports broadcasters now. So many more broadcasts and TV channels that are dedicated to sports. There wasn't any then. I mean, you had to go to the big networks, and it was only three networks at that time. And Cosell was at the top of the list. He was sports broadcasting to a lot of people, so I agree with you. I'd love to be able to go back. And I don't remember watching Monday Night Football games with him because he retired when I was, I think, six. But it would have been a lot of fun to go back and be a part of those. All right, so where would I like to be? Not arena. I found it, Ty Richardson. I found the single worst basketball game. Initially, I thought this might be the worst basketball game of the weekend. I think this might be the worst game of the entire season. Knott Arena in Emmitsburg, Maryland. That's the home of Mount St. Mary's University basketball. The Mountaineers will take on the Wilson College Phoenix. Now, Mount St. Mary's is a Division I team, but they're 0-9. They're being outscored on average by 86-68. So they're losing their games by an average of 18 points. They lost by 50 to North Carolina. They lost by 23 against Marshall. They're coming off of an 85-78 loss to Lehigh. And Wilson is a Division III team. They're a D3 school out of Pennsylvania, and they're 3-7 against Division III competition. All this in front of a house of probably about 900 people, and that's probably counting the ushers and the people that are sitting at press row and the people that are sitting press row. It's going to be two people, each with a tomato can strapped to their ears, and the scorer's table. This is the worst basketball game of the entire year, and for some reason, I feel like I'd like to be there. Just to say I was there to see it.
Yeah, sometimes it's fun to appreciate, and it's, you can't even call it mediocrity, but you can just call it disgusting displays of sports, I guess. What would you, in like one or two terms, in layman's terms, what would you describe this game as?
Utter garbage.
Hot garbage.
Yes, steaming garbage.
Steaming hot garbage.
Dumpster fire. Now, I understand that the lower-level Division I programs have a little trouble scheduling home games, especially this time of the year. So you'll find, you know, a D1 school maybe scheduling an NAIA program or D2. Division III, they're not even on scholarship. There are no Division III scholarship athletes. So I just can't even imagine what this game will be like. And maybe this is Mount St. Mary's only win of the year.
Not fun. I would like
it to be. No, it will be fun. That's why I want to be there.
All right, so we talked about Stephen A. Smith's lack of knowledge of the Chargers and Chiefs earlier in the program, but last night's game, 29-28, pretty entertaining.
4 seconds left in the game, but this is likely the final play that matters. End zone wide open. What a night for Mike Williams. And the Chargers have their first lead of the night at 29-28.
So I told you this off-air, Phil, that the opponent that I'm facing this week and next week for determining who will be wearing the Catwoman outfit had Mike Williams, and he had 29 points last night. I believe he had 3 touchdowns in the 2-point conversion, and he did not start him last night. So I'm very happy about that. I actually almost went to this game. I was either going to go to this game or the game before last week against the Ravens. I texted my buddy Pigor. I was like, hey, man, you want to go to this game? He's like, yeah. And then we were talking about it a couple months ago, and then I texted him again. He didn't hit me back, so I was like, I'll scrap it. These games probably aren't going to be that good anyway. Well, the game against the Ravens last week was awesome. That game went into overtime, and the Chiefs won, and then this game ended the way it did with Phillip Rivers and company storming back. So I had FOMO, honestly, these last two Chiefs games, the fact that I could have paid for tickets and didn't get to go. So, yeah, that's my second FOMO of the day.
Well, let me play a little clip for you, because I would also like to go back to this day in NBA history and be there. Maybe not be there, but be there with you, Ty.
It's 1 point away from matching Michael Jordan for third all time, and now a single free throw away from becoming the NBA's third all-time leading scorer. So probably not the pageantry most people wanted to see, but effective nonetheless and appropriate, because not only did his first point come from the free throw line, but he scored many more points from the free throw line over his career than Michael Jordan has.
That's the sound of Kobe Bryant hitting 2 free throws to pass Michael Jordan as the third leading scorer in NBA history. That's December 14th, 4 years ago, at the Target Center in Minneapolis. He scored a couple of free throws to get 32,293. The Target Center. I called it the Target Center. It's a good thing it's radio. You can't see Ty flipping me off because he is pissed. Because I want to watch, I really want to be there with you, Ty, to watch it happen with you. To watch the tear falling down your face when Kobe passes your favorite athlete of all time. And then I can just stand there next to you and needle you about it until the game is over.
You know what? Kobe has more points than Michael Jordan, but if you think that he's a better player than Michael Jordan, if you look at their careers.
I don't, but I know. I wanted to lead into your defense of Michael, which wasn't even necessary.
Yeah. It would have been hard to watch because I'm a big Michael Jordan defender, even despite some of his dealings in the past. But yeah, I would have been mad, but like I don't know if I would have gone like berserk or anything. So I just would have been like probably shaking my head. They would have met. Kobe was a rookie, I believe. It was either I think 98. If they would have met in like the finals and then Kobe would have been, that would have been painful. Like to take away Michael's last reign, that would have been painful. You would have seen me crying then at like 3.5 years old. So yeah, that one's pretty good. I'm glad that you found that though. My last one is on this day back in 1991, the 57th Heisman Trophy was awarded to Desmond Howard.
On behalf of the members, the Board of Governors, and the offices of the Downtown Athletic Club, as well as the 917 national electors, to announce the winner of the 1991 John W. Heisman Memorial Trophy, awarded to the outstanding college player in the country. And this year's winner is Michigan's Desmond Howard. Congratulations, Desmond.
Phil, I was kind of bummed. The clip I was going to use, I think Keith Jackson was on the call. It was the punt return he had against Ohio State that people have probably seen, but the call is so drowned out with fan screams that I didn't want to use it. So, but this is the guy that I've seen every day on College Game Day for the past 10 plus years, and it's one of those things where you watch these guys on TV and like you see highlights and you can see games to a certain extent, the ones you see on YouTube or ESPN Classic or something, but you didn't get to experience them. Like I like you mentioned Michael Jordan, I didn't get to experience really the full tenacity of Michael Jordan. I didn't get to experience the full tenacity of Desmond Howard in college. And that's just kind of, it's like, it's fun to kind of go back and remember these guys, even if you weren't there in time when they actually played professionally or their college days. So I was like looking back because I think that's important, not just in history, but sports history as well.
23 touchdowns scored by Desmond Howard during that 91 season, and that's the most famous one. Maybe the most famous touchdown that I can remember for a Heisman Trophy winner because of the pose. It's just because of the pose. He did it against Ohio State, and that'll have some impact in the big rivalry game, but because of the pose, that was a cultural moment in 1991.
Woodson came after him, right, Phil?
I'd have been 17 years old at that point. Yeah, Woodson came after him.
Okay, that's my thought.
But he's the first to make the pose, certainly not the last, because it's become something, I don't know if kids do this still, but it started with Desmond Howard. And all of us teenagers in the 90s, in your early 20s, if you made a play in a pickup football game or a tackle football game that you're playing with your friends, you did the Desmond Howard Heisman Trophy pose.
Yeah, it's weird. I think the two most used, and it's kind of changed with professionally, like getting in team celebrations and stuff, but for football-wise, I think the two biggest celebrations that I see most consistently, at least from the really, really good players, are the Heisman throw pose and the throat slash. Like, for whatever, and D-Mac did against LSU. It's like he didn't get a flag or get tossed against LSU in 2007, because I remember him doing it then. But that's like the two most consistent celebrations that I see on a weekly basis is if the players are mount to like what they're in the caliber realms where they could be contenders for the Heisman, it seems like.
Good NFL career, if unspectacular, for Howard, who was the fourth overall pick. Won a Super Bowl with Green Bay, bounced around a little bit, finished his career with, 2,895 punt return yards, 8 touchdowns as a punt returner, and lined up at wide receiver in the NFL a little bit. Yeah, sure did. Didn't never have like a huge year as a receiver.
Had a kickoff return in that Super Bowl.
That's right. He was the Super Bowl MVP. Mm-hmm. That's right. So I think there's got to be others who were Heisman Trophy winners and Super Bowl MVPs, although I'm positive that'll be a pretty short list.
I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be a pretty short list.
I got to think about that. Get back. Let me see if I can figure it out during the break. Might have to research
look
that.
Look to Roger Staubach, perhaps. Tony Dorsett, maybe. That'd be an interesting thing to look up.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.